Okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 127 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And with me, on the line, with his SM58 microphone, new and improved sound quality for Shutters Inc. fans, Mr. Shelton Muller, how are you?
Well, let me just use this SM58 to... Hello, baby. How you doing?
Yeah. Barry White is in the house.
I love you, baby. I love you, baby. Yeah.
Mate, actually, I love it.
That's cool. It's really cool. Well, actually, everybody, I really must thank Bruce because I've needed to set up a sound, you know, recording setup for my computer this week for a project that I have going on. And Bruce, thank you so much for your online and personal assistance in helping me get the gear, helping me get the sound set up. And, of course, the benefit is that I get this work done. Thank you, Bruce.
No worries.
And everybody else gets a little bit better sound from here on. We've waited 127 episodes, and I finally got a proper microphone.
That's great.
So you can hear the difference, can you?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
okay. Fantastic. Definitely. Oh, well, we've had such rave reviews on the sound quality of this podcast in times past.
Yeah.
Because of your brilliant, you know, sound engineering skills.
Thank you.
And you are, you know, among Australia's elite. There's no doubt about that. So I'm glad to be able to do my part, mate.
Mate, I'm stoked. Because it sounds heaps better than... What was it you were using before? Was it a Logitech headset?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Logitech headset, which I was listening to my podcast the other day and I thought, oh, don't sound too bad considering it wasn't, you know, it was only $50 worth of headset or something.
Exactly. You know, and I'm not disparaging Logitech headsets. I mean, they do a job and, you know, and they fit a price point.
Mm.
But when you really want to take things seriously, you go to a professional microphone and the SM58... is a great microphone.
It's a classic, isn't it?
Oh, mate? It is. Mate, it's been an industry workhorse for like 40 years.
You're kidding, really? That long?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, they're great.
They're damn tough, that's for sure. I know that much from
playing in a band. Yeah, you can just about drive a tank over them.
Well, it's nice to know we're sounding every bit better than we usually do, mate. That's fantastic. So we're on the improve. We're just getting better with time.
Exactly, like a fine red wine.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I've got nothing to whine about, though, this week.
Boom, boom.
Yeah, ba-dum-tsh, yeah. I was, for the first time, able to, you know, because you talked about my iTouch last week, or was it last week or the week before?
Yep.
So I thought I'd have a bit of a listen to the whole podcast, because I haven't listened to an entire podcast for a long time.
Right.
And I noticed that a couple of weeks ago, you did actually put the sound of an applause into the podcast wherein I requested it, and I didn't know that. Thank you very much.
Well, there you go. See? Yeah. As much as I gave you grief about directing how I should put it together, I still did it for you.
You still acquiesced. You must have thought it was a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, we still have a few things from Landon's email
Epic
to
list.
Talk about.
Yep.
Yeah, and there's a few aspects, and it's been nice to get emails from listeners saying, hey, you know what, we really are enjoying this.
Yeah, we had a heap of emails this week.
Yeah.
So thank you everyone for those little comments, just letting us know that, yes, you hadn't all gone to sleep. That's great.
Well, I was hoping that they wouldn't, you know, and I suppose it is something that people want to know about, even if their intention never is really to go pro, but at least to know what the professional side of photography is. And look, I think the first thing that you have to be very careful of, and I may have mentioned this before because I feel very passionate about this subject, is the fact that there's one thing about doing, and I'm sure you appreciate this too, Bruce, that if you make your passion your job, your passion can soon be taken from you. It can soon be killed by the very fact that you have to do things within that, you know, job that you don't really enjoy, that's connected to what used to be your passion. For you, it'd be, you know, you'd have a passion for sound and audio engineering and recording.
Absolutely.
That I imagine sometimes would there'd be jobs you get that you think, oh, not this again.
Yeah.
You know, would I be right?
Yeah.
And the same thing. Yeah. And the same thing in photography. You're asked to photograph things. You think, oh, you're kidding me. You know, this is, for instance, a client will give you 100 products and say, look, I just want these photographed on white. We're going to contour them and put them in a catalog. look, there's not a lot of creativity to that. You've got to light it right and you've got to get the technicalities right. But, you know, you'll work for that on a few days maybe, and it's going to bore you brainless.
Yeah.
Mind you, the end result of the invoice is certainly good.
Yeah.
You don't mind that at all.
Yeah.
But you have to be very careful. If you are considering entering the photographic, you know, arena, either part-time or full-time as a professional photographer, to some degree, be careful that what you love doesn't become something that you end up not loving anymore. I think that would be a tragedy.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, so what might be the idea to do, and this is just a suggestion, but if you are considering, I don't know, dipping your toes in, as it were, try it part-time and try a few different kinds of work, if you can indeed find that. You know, try a photographing a wedding, or at least being maybe a second shooter on a wedding, so that you can see how a wedding goes before you dip your feet in, you know, all the way, or you take the complete plunge. You may find that it's not for you, and here you have left your job or you've changed your lifestyle and suddenly you're thinking, oh, this isn't for me.
This isn't what I bargained on.
No, it isn't what I know. And I found that out very, very early in my career, that there were things that I was asked to do. I thought, oh, this is not, you know, what I really thought being a photographer was all about. I was young and naive, and I suppose that I expected the world to pay me my living in doing what I wanted to do. But that's just not the way it works. Conversely, though, having a camera in my hand and working as a professional and having the opportunities that I've had, you know, I've traveled all over the world and had adventures I never thought I'd have and met people I never thought I'd meet. I've seen things I never thought I would see and done things I never thought I would do. So, you know, I talk to people about some of the adventures that I've had with a camera in my hand, and they say, wow, what a life you've had. And it's true. So I'm not taking it for granted. But be very, very careful that you don't wind up in a maybe a facet of the industry just through a series of circumstances that you don't actually like. I mean, if you're going to be a wedding photographer, enjoy weddings. Be a people person. If you're going to be a studio photographer, then enjoy the whole process of setting up your lighting. Enjoy the process of working with boring products but making them look really cool. Enjoy the process as much as you possibly can. And I'd say that if you're going to choose something, either as a part-time or full-time profession, make sure that your heart can handle it. Because
yeah.
If it doesn't, you're going to end up, A, hating the very thing that you used to love, and B, you might end up actually being fairly average at what you do. I've seen that happen time and time again.
The one thing out of everything that you've just said, the one thing I think I would really spotlight is make sure that you love every aspect of whatever niche it is you're going into. Like you mentioned there about, you know, if you're going to go into weddings, you know, love people photography. And, you know, if you're going to shoot studio stuff, love setting up the lighting. And I would sort of elaborate on that to say that, you know, if you're going to focus on just being a studio photographer, then love every part of what is involved in that process. Like not just the setting up the lights, but all of the other bits and pieces, and I don't know what they all are, but, you know, make sure that you love every aspect of it. For me, it's, you know, love recording, love mixing, love editing, love all of those bits that make up being an audio engineer. And I would say the same would go for, you know, any aspect of the professional photographic industry. You know, whatever you decide the niche is that you want to pursue, make sure you love every part of what comes into that niche.
Yes. Which is another part of Landon's email, which I thought of was interesting. He talks about, you know, flexibility versus speciality. When
right.
I started out as a photographer, I must admit I was just happy to take anything anyone gave me. That might have been rather immodest of me, but I did need to eat.
Yeah.
And because of the nature with which I entered the industry, basically I was thrown into it because I was working for a studio that suddenly went under.
Probably at that time you were also trying to find your feet and to find what you liked as well.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And it's taken me a fair while to realize what that is. It's taken me years to realize what that is.
Right.
I love all kinds of photography. And look, I love the diversity of my work. I really do. I don't think that me personally, I would like to specialize. There's certain things that I would never really avidly pursue. And that is some of the really boring catalog work that can drive you crazy. But I have no problem actually being in a studio and making a bottle of soap suds look really cool. But I really don't, because it's quite a craft.
yeah,
to actually light something ordinary and make it really cool. And then when you take that image to your client and they, you know, they go ape over it, well, you feel fantastic.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, but look, there are clients of mine that, like Kodak, for instance, whom I work for, they have asked me to do every conceivable kind of photography I could possibly imagine. They have asked me to do boring products, 100 products on white. Okay, well, you're Kodak, and this is a great relationship, and what photographer doesn't want to have Kodak for a client?
Yeah.
So I'll do that. They've asked me to do, I remember years ago, about 7 years ago, I was asked to help them set up a little system whereby you, like a portable studio system, where you could do the kind of pixie photo shopping center kind of mum and kid, you know, instant portraits. And they wanted me to help to set up a system. I had to go on the road into shopping centers and set it up and, you know, run it through and work out what the difficulties would be. And that was, you know, beneath me, in terms of, I don't want to sound too egotistical, but I'm not the kind of photographer who wants to stand in a shopping center with a formulaed setup of two brollies and photograph kids with his little squeaky toy.
Yeah.
But this was Kodak, and like I said, they're a great client, and they've, you know, they paid me well to do that. But they've flown me all over Australia, and I've done some really cool stuff with them. And they've been a great supporter of me and my magazine. So this was all about the relationship. I look back on it now and I laugh and it's enjoyable, but there's some parts of it that drove me absolutely crazy. So if this is your client, if you have a client like that, you may not have much choice. Another client of mine, an advertising agency, has asked me to photograph everything from, you know, really good-looking women to boring dust bowls of real estate, you know, that are of new estates that have nothing on them. Sometimes your clients will just expect you to be able to be as diverse as possible. And that's a great thing. I if your client can say, well, look, we'll get Shelton for that. Oh, we'll get Shelton for that. We'll get Shelton for that for 90% of the work that comes in, then fantastic. If you specialize, it also has disadvantages, but it has advantages. The disadvantage is you only get that kind of work. And if you're a person who likes diversity, then you're going to get pretty bored pretty quick. But if you're a person who just loves that kind of photography and you're really good at it, well, you've got to fish harder for the work because you're specializing, your pond is smaller, as it were. But then the work that you get, because you're so good at it, you can charge more for.
Yeah, these and days, you become well known for serving that niche.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there are famous photographers who serve special niches. I would only hope that even these, you know, these professionals would not get too bored with what they do. But I remember, you know, I think it was Herb Ritz, the late Herb Ritz, who used to do some fabulous commercial
work. I love Herb Ritz's work.
Oh, awesome work.
Yeah.
Now, he charged $75,000 a day.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so that's pretty good money.
I'd get out of bed for that.
I'd get out of there. Yeah, I'd sort of do one job and take the year off. You know, but you know, I mean, he was a brilliant specialist in his craft, and there are others, Annie Leibovitz and others, who do very specialized work, and I don't know what she charges, but I'm sure it's a lot. And then there are very famous food photographers, wine photographers, and then of course there are studios that just churn them out, you know, the catalog stuff. And I think that would drive me nuts. But they can, because they do it quick, they do it well, they get it done on time, they can charge a lot for it. I don't know whether I would like that so much. For me, the thing I love about the work that I've done is that it's very diverse, and every day is completely different. That can sometimes, you know, do your head in. But by the same token, it does really expand your vision and give you a lot of fun opportunities. So flexibility is great because you're able to get more work. You may not be able to charge as much because you're a bit of a jack of all trades, but your clients love you for that. They like knowing that, they like having a devil they know. They really do. They like to be able to ring you up and say, oh, look, we're used to working with you. We know how he works. We know how he deals with our clients. And that's very important. You're dealing with their clients. So you're a go-between, as it were. You're the person maintaining that relationship between the advertising agency or the magazine or the PR company or whomever, and their client. So you've got to be a pretty good guy. You've got to be fairly amicable, easy to work with. Otherwise, you reflect badly on your client. So they love to be able to trust you no matter what the job is. And then there are some times when, and I think I said this a few Shutters Inks ago, when they'll ring you up, as you know, one did me recently, and offer me a job that I just knew I couldn't do. That was something for a specialist, and I didn't have the setup, and it would have just taken me far too long, and I would have just ended mucking them around.
Do you care to elaborate on what that was, like what type of job it was?
Yeah, look, they wanted studio photographs of a lot of bathroom fixtures, you know, sinks, taps,
okay,
and all those kinds of things, which meant building sets, plumbing, all sorts of things.
Oh, wow.
Now, there's a studio that has all of that ready to go. They just needed to get and find out who it was. But I was prepared to hire a studio and get the thing all built if need be. But I realized, A, I didn't have the time because I was just so flat out. And C, I might muck it up and end up charging nowhere near enough. But if I charged enough, it would have been more. It would have ended up charging them more than what the specialist who was already set up would have charged. Now, I missed out on the money, but I have a feeling it would have been more of a headache than it was worth. And I like my client, and I really don't want to muck him around. You know, over the 24 years or so that I've been working as a photographer, I have done the wrong thing by a couple of them, not intentionally, but just through circumstance, and I've lost the relationship. And that really hurts, not just because you lose the job from a financial perspective, but you like to be liked, and you like to be respected, and you lose that, and it really does hurt you. So in this particular case, I decided it was best that they get a specialist, and they were so happy that I recommended that they do that because the shoot went off without a hitch. Only a little bit of Photoshop work was required, and, you know, in terms of making it all look proper and fixed to the wall and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But overall, they were very, very pleased. And I went in a couple of weeks later and said, "How did that go, guys? Did everything work out?" And they said, "Oh, spectacular, mate." And then they thanked me. I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But they said, "Oh, look, you know, thanks for that. We really appreciate it." And I thought, "Oh, well, great," because I thought I'd actually muck them about a fair bit, you know, for a couple of days getting my head together. But, you know, I would rather have done that. So there's flexibility, diversity, or specialty. For me, I don't know whether this was so much a conscious decision as just the way things, you know, instead of just the way things worked out. But for me, I do like having the flexibility of different kinds of clients, different kinds of jobs, and, you know, different kinds of days. If I don't like a job, well, it doesn't matter. There are it swings and roundabouts, you know.
Even though it may not have been a conscious decision, it was quite possibly a subconscious decision that, you know, you know, I don't want to be just pigeonholed into just weddings or just studios. And like I said, although it might not have been a conscious decision, you probably subconsciously just made it happen that you got that diversity of work over time.
I don't know. I think it might be right. I don't know. If one client would recommend me to another and the whole networking thing would happen that I described a few weeks ago, I was in a situation whereby if they rang me up and they said, "Can you shoot this?" I didn't know whether I could shoot it or not. I'd just say yes. And I think, well, I'll just figure it out on the job. And if it's a 2-hour job that takes me 10 hours, well, I've learned how to do it. And, you know, it's 2 hours work that I would not have otherwise been paid for. Now, I mean, I have a minimum sort of half day now. But at the time, you know, the shoot might have taken me, I remember one shoot taking me about 2.5 days, and I had to build a little, I had to light the thing. It was a real education. It was just a whole bunch of drill bits, and they had to be properly set up, and the diagram was very, very
specific.
Complex. Yeah, specific and complex.
Right.
And this was years ago. This would have been the very late 80s, and for the working with Tools and Equipment magazine that I first started on. And it took me a couple of days to actually complete and roll upon roll of film. And I was not able to charge anywhere near as much as the time and the materials cost. But this was, A, a reliable client. They'd asked me to do it. And B, for me, it was a great learning experience. And no one else was rushing at me with work at the time. So I was able to charge. I was able to charge at the time, you know, I forget, a few $100 worth anyway. And, well, you know, it was a couple of days. I earned a couple of, or a few $100s, and it was better than not working at all. that's the nature of the beast when you're starting out. So, you know, in that particular, look, it's all swings and roundabouts. The other day I went into the ANZ, the bank in 100 Queen Street. I walked up the stairs. I set up a portable brolly system with my ITTL, you know, flash on with one brolly. I photographed two people. I walked out of there and charged a half day rate. It took me 20 minutes. But, you know, they know that I have a minimum half day rate and it swings and roundabouts. So there's a few hundred dollars there for 20 minutes work.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, I may have to work a little harder for something else. That's just the way I work. But my clients like it. I'm flexible. I'm reasonable. And I will do most things that they ask me to do. I like it that way, you know.
Yeah.
It really does work itself out. And in that respect, you know, there's a lot of photographers who decide that because they like that diversity, they will maybe do a lot of stock photography, which is an interesting business in these these internet times.
Yep.
You've got companies like iStock Photo and Shutterstock, you know, selling images by the millions every year off the internet and paying photographers 25, 50 cents per use
right.
of the image. Yeah, yeah. You've got other agencies like Getty's and other larger stock agencies which will pay the photographer more, but their volume is a lot less.
Right.
Some there. So you, if you're shooting for stock, which is very diverse, or it can be a specialty, you can say, look, I will specialize, and some photographers do. They specialize in pretty girls with headsets on. And right. you know how many photographs are sold every day of a pretty girl with a headset on?
I can imagine there'd be thousands.
Absolute thousands of photographs of pretty girls with headsets on. You know, because you think of the average brochure you get. This is the face of our company. You know, this is the receptionist. I mean, there's all sorts of uses for photograph like that.
Yeah.
Photographs of, you know, anything to do with the internet. Photographs of anything to do with business. Handshakes and, you know, corporate.
Telephony.
Telephony, absolutely. But because there's such a high demand for this work and there's websites to furnish with photographs, there are magazines, posters, billboards, all sorts of print and internet media that require photographs, companies like iStock Photo and Shutterstock and others have basically said to their photographers, look, we'll sell you, you can go to an agency that sells that photograph once for a couple of hundred dollars, or we'll sell it a few thousand times for 25 or 50 cents each.
Yeah, right.
So you as a photographer have to, you know, work out what you're going to do. If you've got images like that, and there are people making a lot of money from companies that sell their photographs at a few cents per pop, and they're making $100,000, you know, $200,000 a year from stock photography.
Wow.
That's a hell of a lot of pictures sold, and often they'll sell one photograph thousands and thousands of times. One of iStock Photo's biggest selling photographs ever is of two hands holding a small plant with the root system attached.
Oh, okay.
And that's the photograph. Conceptually, that photograph can mean a million things.
Yeah.
You know, it can mean the growth of a business. It could mean caring for something fragile. It could mean the environment. It can mean so many things. So conceptually, that photographer just rocked it.
Yeah, you know, hit the jackpot.
Hit the jackpot, yeah, because, you know, and that's the key to shooting stock. Photographing images, you know, providing images to the agency that can be used for a broad variety of things. If you're a specialist and you photograph, you know, ducks, you're not going to get as many sales. But if you take a incredible photograph of a duck, that someone will use, that's just mind-boggling, then you'd put that into an agency that's going to sell that image for a lot more money, not 25 cents or 50 cents. So the stock photography game is a very interesting thing, and if you want to, we can devote a podcast to that. But that, again, is the flexibility versus specialty thing. I have a lot of stock photographs from my travels all over the world. But the agencies are wanting, they will not accept photographs of people. And hello, what do I photograph?
Yeah, right.
They will not accept photographs of people, no matter how, you know, way, how far off, how middle of nowhere these people might actually live. They will not accept it unless it has a model release. Right. So you can imagine there I am in Kashgar or Turpan or some godforsaken village up in the Andes or the Himalayas, and I'm photographing somebody I don't know. I'm not going to ask them for a model release, but then I can't sell the photograph either.
Yeah.
Because the agency won't accept it. So for me, my travel photographs are used for my editorials and, you know, my tutorials, etc. And you know, on the internet and in my magazines, but I can't sell them.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's a, you know, but then there are a million landscapes of the Andes and the Himalayas taken by other photographers, so I can't really sell them too much either. So for me, stock photography, I gave it a bit of a shot, but it just didn't work for me, and there was too much time involved. So I haven't really worried about it too much. But, you know, I prefer a bird in the hand as against two in the bush. That's my way of doing things. So I'll take, you know, gigs from paying clients. And then I don't really devote myself to stock photography. But there's a lot of photographers who do. There's a young woman in South Queensland. Oh, I forget her name. Oh, I only wrote about her a few months ago. I forget her name, but she specializes in a lot of those, like I said, those photographs of, you know, pretty girls with headsets and all sorts of corporate and
right.
You know, telephony photographs. And she's making a killing, absolute killing. She's left her job, her husband's left his job, and they devote themselves to this speciality. And they do really, really well. There are photographers all over the world who are selling volumes of images because they just have this, I don't know, this conceptual mentality where they're able to take photographs that they know will sell on several planes and sell, you know, it's a high quality photograph, has several concepts attached to it, and they're able to specialize in that. Not this little black duck. I'm not that talented. But there are so many avenues these days that the photographer can make money as long as you know what you're doing. And I suppose I don't want to rave on too long in this podcast, but we've got more to talk about from Landon's email perhaps next week that we can talk about. For instance, he talks about, you know, your style, selling your style to a target audience. I don't know whether we can talk about that this week or next week.
Yeah, we can go into it now.
Well, if you like, but, you know, if
I mean, it's an interesting thing. You know, you're talking about style. Before we started recording, Shelton made the comment that he didn't think he had a style. And I immediately said, what are you talking about? You know, because I can see a photo pop up in the stream of my contacts on Flickr, and I can just look at it and go, that's a Shelton shot, before I've even seen the name of the photographer below it, or, you know, the name of the person who posted it. And Shelton, you said Richard Annable has made the same comment. So obviously you have some sort of a style.
Well, it would appear so, I imagine. I suppose it's true. I've never really analyzed it. I have a certain methodology, I suppose, that results in a style. I imagine that's what all photographers do. I've never thought of myself as having a style, but yes, I suppose in certain arenas or aspects of my photography, I do. Yeah, Richard says, oh, that's just so Shelton, that shot. Now, I don't know whether to... excuse me, Richard, because I know you're listening, but I don't know whether I should take that as a compliment or maybe not. Does it mean my work is getting boring, predictable, or is it that just, you know, I have a style that's appreciated? I don't know. I imagine, hopefully, it's the latter.
For me, it's usually the lighting and the just the angle of the shot, like, you know, combination of the perspective that you've taken the shot from and focal length and more often than not lighting as well. You know, those three things are usually the hallmarks for me that just screams out, this is a Shelton Muller photograph.
Thank you. I think, to be honest with you, that would describe how I get myself into a boring situation and make it look interesting.
Right.
I know that if I put on a 14mm lens, that it's going to look really crazy, right?
Yep.
So I go, okay, let's give that a try. Because if you, on my blog recently, I was talking about this $150 Sigma lens that I've bought, and it's the best investment I've made in such a long time because it's so damn sharp, and it's 14mm, and it works on my Nikon D700, which is an FX or 35mm size sensor.
Yep.
And I love it. So I photographed these boring pipes and, you know, first of all, I thought, okay, boring situation, let's get some really wacky stuff happening, like the perspective of a 14mm lens.
Yeah.
Then I used a natural frame that I found in the pipes, you know, to frame the two guys behind it. So I went for something very typical, a frame within a frame. And right. Then I went for something else that I thought, okay, we'll just change the lighting a little and I'll get some off-camera flash. Now, these, to me, I suppose, are default positions that I will take to help me get out of a sticky situation and make something boring look interesting. To me, I suppose, and this may be very presumptuous on my part, but I suppose to me, that's just what you do. But I would imagine every photographer would approach that differently. I thought I was just getting boring and you know, falling back on my default positions. But I know that it works.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's good enough, you know. But if that's my style, great. I love having that style. I've never been told by a client that I recall, only maybe domestic clients such as wedding clients who said to me, oh, we love the way you shoot a wedding. We love the way you see things. That's great. But maybe in retrospect, there have been a couple of clients who recently said that to me. Basically, the way they've said it, though, is that what did he say? And it's on my blog. He says, look, it's really boring, but we know you'll go in and make something of it, which I suppose is them saying, we've seen you do this before. Go and do it again.
Yeah.
And I suppose maybe my mentality is I walk in and I fall back on these default positions like focal length. You know, 14 mil, go really wide or really, you know, long, minimal depth of field, massive depth of field. Find the extreme.
Yeah.
Then a perspective or something interesting in composition. Leading line, frame within frame, overhead or, you know, perspective, lower perspective looking up. Find something dynamic and different to do. And then, you know, throw some off-camera flash or some other kind of lighting on there and away you go. It really was that simple. Well, to me, it seemed that simple. When I talk about it with other people, they say, well, you say it's simple because you thought of it, but we wouldn't think of it, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe that is my style, and I suppose that's maybe what – I don't know that I've avidly sold it to my clients, though, mate. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
They just know that I'll go into a boring situation and make something interesting of it. If that's my style, then I am indeed honored because I don't think that's as easy as it sounds.
No.
You know, to do that. And if that's what they hire me for, then I'll happily pay my mortgage and feed my family on it. I just didn't know that it was a style, I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
But I really think that photographers have to have some – they have to be more than capable.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of very technically capable photographers, but they have to be able to talk – they have to be able to look at something and say – how do I present this in a manner different to where every other person would stand? I was recently critiquing a wedding photograph of a photographer on my website, on Five Minute Photographer.
Yep.
And he posted a photograph of a bride and a groom in a convertible with a big just married sign on the back.
I saw the shot.
Okay, so you know the shot I'm talking about.
Yep.
Now, my critique was that he'd photographed it basically from a fairly standard position with a fairly standard lens. It was a competent photograph, but it wasn't interesting, dynamic. It didn't really have any perspective or viewpoint on it that made it different to the way everybody would have stood there and said, hey, look at that car.
Yeah.
So that it wasn't creative. And I think that's what was really required. My suggestion was, and I said, look, if it had been me, I would have put on a very wide-angle lens. I would have walked up to the car and stood over it because it's a convertible, right? It would have been beneath me from a standing position. It would have been very low. That way, I would have been able to look down into the car, which you couldn't see in his photograph. I would have been able to look down into the car. They're sitting in the car. I can see him. I can see her. I can see her dress. I can see the whole of the car, front to back. The just married sign would be in the bottom of the frame, very, very wide and very big. And I could see the whole interior of the car as well without really doing anything other than walking up to it with a very wide-angle lens.
Yep.
The photographer who took the photograph, I think, just settled for where he was at the time with the lens that he had on at the time and didn't think that through. So maybe that's what I do. I don't know. I just thought that's what all photographers do. And I don't mean that as an insult or I don't mean to sound presumptuous, but I just think that that's our job, you know, to make something ordinary into the extraordinary.
I find this as much in audio as in photography, that there is, as you said, people who are technically capable, but I think you need to understand the science and the art of whatever it is you're approaching, whether it be, you know, capturing an image or capturing an audio signal. It's as much the science, you know, understanding the technical side of it, but at the same time, understanding the artistic potential of that environment, that situation, and how you can, you know, approach it artistically as well as technically.
Yes, absolutely. There have been the one thing that I'm learning on by running the variety of workshops that I run is that often photographers will fall into one of those two categories very capably. That right. They'll be technically proficient and they'll walk into the scene and they'll, oh yeah, I know how to do this, Shelton, that's great. But the photograph that they take, while technically proficient, will be quite boring.
It lacks the creative angle.
Yeah, exactly. Then there's the other photographer, you know, who'll walk in and their vision is incredible. You know, they'll be on the same workshop with you, but they'll have taken it from a completely different angle, but they fluke it or they see it in their head, and you can see when they show you on the back of the camera, you can see what they were trying to achieve, but they fail in the technicalities.
Yeah.
And my workshops are designed to say, well, look, really, there's both required. You can't have one without the other. Because you need to be technically proficient in order for you to make that camera see that scene the way your head sees it,
yeah.
To interpret it that way. Now, that requires whatever, depth of field, shutter speed, metering for highlights, metering for shadows, or whatever it might be. So you need the technical proficiency. But, you know, at the same time, you need the creative proficiency. If you're a photographer who has both those things going on, then you're a good photographer. You have it all, and you're just going to grow and grow and grow. But if there's something blocking you, one of those two things blocking you, I would just say don't enter this business.
Yeah.
Especially, we're running a wedding photography workshop on the weekend, and there were people at the workshop who were already photographing weddings, but they had very little technical knowledge, and they would, you know, bang away, point and shoot, bang, 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 do 10 shots, hope that one works out.
Right.
And just, you know, if it didn't, they'd look in the back of the camera and they'd fiddle a bit, and then they'd take it again, look at the back of the camera, fiddle a bit, and this is how they describe the way they shoot a wedding.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, look, I'm sure you're taking some lovely photographs, I'm thinking to myself, but that's just not how it should be done. A professional, especially at a wedding, needs to really know what he's doing. But
that approach is going to end up with a very low strike rate of hits.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You can't go in with a machine gun approach and you know hope to hit someone. I suppose it's, you know, like we were saying a few weeks ago, you can go in with a machine gun and hope to hit somebody, but a sniper with a scope will do it one shot.
Yep.
And while an awful analogy, it is nonetheless the same with photography.
Yep.
You and I taught this at the workshop. I said, look, take your moment, because you want just one great shot from this. And in this setup, you want one great shot. So why don't just take the moment, and if you know what's going wrong, if you know what you need to do, then do it. But, you know, don't bang away and then take two attitudes. Well, I'll take 20 photos. One of them will be great. And even if it's not absolutely great, I can fix it in Photoshop. I just think that's such an entirely wrong notion.
Yeah.
Because you get it. You're a photographer, right? You're not a gambler. You're a photographer. You're not here to play a numbers game because it's digital and it's not costing you anything. Actually, it is costing you something, because if you're taking 10 times the amount of photographs you need to take, you're wearing out your camera 10 times faster. I mean, let's face it, the average camera has 150,000 shutters, you know, shutter frame, maybe 300,000 if it's a pro camera.
Hmm.
So you take 10 times as many photos as you need to. You're, you know, shortening the life of the shutter of your camera and the mirror box assembly, you know, incredibly.
Not to mention, if it's a wedding that you're shooting, you're wearing out the bride and groom.
Yes. Yeah. And if you're doing something commercial and you've got an art director or, you know, the editor of the magazine or whatever with you, and you're just going, oh, that didn't work. Okay, let me try this. Oh, that didn't work. Let me try this. No, okay, that didn't work. Let me try this. they're not going to be particularly confident of your abilities. But if you're on the job and you're right there and you go, okay, give me a minute, all right, and you just take a minute to just do your calculations, guide number calculations, your f-stop calculations, your whatever you've got to do, and then you take a photograph, maybe it won't quite work. That's what we used to do in the studio with Polaroids. But by the time you've taken a Polaroid, by the time you take a photograph digitally, as a professional photographer, you've got a pretty good idea of where you're going. And these Polaroid or the screen on the back of your camera will yield an image that's acceptable. Maybe not brilliant because you've forgotten something or your calculation was slightly wrong or there was a factor there that something that you didn't factor in. But at least you're able to, you're seen to do the thing that you've been hired to do, right? You know, anyone can come in and bang away and hope to get 1 out of 100. But that's not what we do. So, yes, technical proficiency and creativity certainly come into play. And I think that because I have a good understanding of the technical, but also have a default vision, I suppose, if that's what we call my style.
Right.
I'm able to go into a situation like this, reach into my bag of tools, so as it were, which is all my experience. Oh, when in this situation, do this. When in that situation, do this. I just reach into my subconscious or conscious tools and say, well, this is what I'm going to do. That's a very handy default position to have, I must admit. It does come with experience, but it also comes with creativity and technical proficiency. That kind of thing is what a client is really paying you for,
Yeah. And I must admit, in the audio world, I find the same thing. There are not only peers of mine within the radio industry, but also big name mixing engineers when it comes to music, who I can listen to their work and identify and just go, yeah, that is so much their style.
Yeah. And so, would they have default positions that they take for certain instruments or certain sounds?
Some do.
Right.
And I've known radio production guys who will fall back on using, the same sorts of, audio manipulative tricks to create, a certain style to their work. And you just go, yep, that's that guy. He falls back to that because he knows it works.
Yeah.
Which can be, both a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. Well, Well, for me, I mean, I don't know why, I know why I would say it that way, and that it's a blessing in that you get the job done.
Yep.
A curse in that maybe you get the job done the same way over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, and you run the risk of pigeonholing yourself.
Yes. Yes. Every now and again, it is a good idea to step outside yourself and maybe just give your client just a little bit something to say, hey, look what I did this time.
Yeah.
And they go, cool.
Yep.
So they see you with a whole new light. Well, that's a good thing. But, if you're time constrained, and often I am, because you're working with people who have jobs and, like in the ANZ, literally, I had no time. Getting to photograph this lady was like getting, okay, I've only got this many minutes and off you go. Well,
right. It
worked perfectly. I knew what I could rely on loved the photographs. So often you're working with serious time constraints, and so you therefore do go to your default position because you haven't got the time and you haven't got the mental space to really,
explore other ideas.
Yeah. If you do, fantastic.
Yep.
But often the sheer reality of it is they want an image, they want it fast. We can't be mucking around our client. We've got this much time. Come on, Shelton, get in, get it done. And that's fine. That's what they're paying me to do. That's okay. No problem. Other jobs are, a real fun, cool thing. And you get to do so many different kinds of photography in the one shoot.
I guess harking back to what we were talking about either in the last episode or two episodes ago about the difference of working either supervised or unsupervised. I guess when you are unsupervised, you can, take all of that extra time that you like, at a certain point, I guess you can say to yourself, well, I'm prepared to spend a little more time than I'm invoicing the client for.
Yes.
Because I know I'm learning and I'm gaining experience from it.
Yep.
Sometimes you're just having fun. Yeah, exactly. Mm. Where if you have actually got the client there working with you, it's like, well, okay, I've got to stick to the clock and therefore I will fall back to the things that I know that will work.
Yeah, Absolutely. And that is often the way of it. So I suppose, you know, I'd wind up by saying that if you are going to do this part-time, full-time, whatever, understand that these are the realities of the life of the photographer. That, you know, it's not the kind of creative, you know, experience all the time that you think it is. But I tell you what, there'd only be a handful of jobs I could think of that would be better, and even then I'd question it. It's a great job, there's no doubt about it, and I'm so thankful that I've been able to fulfill mine and do what I do, and I've got so much more yet to do. I was offered a photo tour in Bhutan today.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I think I'm saying yes to that one.
When?
2010, I think.
Oh, okay, yes. Cool. So 2010. Next year, yep.
For next year, so cool, seriously cool. you know, these kinds of things are, I mean, and I'm going to India, of course, and being paid
this
well
year,
to do
yeah.
that this year. So I'm, you know, that is really, really cool. And then, of course, yes, I've photographed everything from dead fish in plastic wrappers to, you know, the most incredible, you know, to Machu Picchu at sunrise. So, you know, I can't complain. I really can't complain. If you're willing to accept the swings and the roundabouts, the highs and the lows, it's a great job. But just be prepared for the way that it can really mess with you as a creative person, because if you're not prepared for that, it can come as a bit of a shock. And the disappointment of it, which may not be very long-lasting but nonetheless impactful enough, can destroy you if you're not prepared to diversify or be happy in the specialty. Therein is the decision, I think.
Excellent. Well, thank you once again, Mr. Muller.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And, of course, everyone will be able to understand me that a little bit better because the timbre in my voice has a little more quality to it.
Yes. That's excellent. All righty. Well, that's another one down. I reckon we've probably got maybe one or two more in this Going Pro series.
Yes, certainly. Yep. Absolutely. Well, we're getting the emails to say, keep it up.
So, that's good.
We will.
Remember, if you want to send us emails, please do studio@audiotu.com or shelton@audiotu.com.
We have been, and look, if you don't mind me interjecting, yep. We have been receiving emails that we haven't been reading because we've been covering these subjects. So we will get to you, okay? Thank you so much.
Yeah, so please don't think that we've just totally ignored your email. We will
Jim
get
Rockwell
to them.
Yep. And Mark Loader and a few other guys, thank you so much for your emails. We'll
Absolutely.
Get to you. We'll mention you. Thank you.
All right, mate. We'll talk with you next week.
Absolutely, you bet.
See you then.
See you soon, mate. Bye.
This has been another AudioToYou.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out
ShuttersInkPodcast.com.
Please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@AudioToYou.com.